Father, please help us to see you as a God, gracious and merciful, slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness. Please help us to want to trust you and serve you. Amen. Jonah chapter 1. Now, the word of the Lord came to Jonah, the son of Amittai, saying, "Arise, go to Nineveh, that great city, and call out against it, for their evil has come up before me." But Jonah rose to flee to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. He went down to Joppa and found a ship going to Tarshish. So he paid the fare and went down into it to go with them to Tarshish, away from the presence of the Lord. But the Lord hurled a great wind upon the sea, and there was a mighty tempest on the sea, so that the ship threatened to break up. Then the mariners were afraid, and each cried out to his God, and they hurled the cargo that was in the ship into the sea to lighten it for them. But Jonah had gone down into the inner part of the ship, and had lain down and was fast asleep. So the captain came and said to him, "What do you mean, you sleeper? Arise, call out to your God. Perhaps the God will give a thought to us, that we may not perish." And they said to one another, "Come, let us cast lots, that we may know on whose account this evil has come upon us." So they cast lots, and the lots fell on Jonah. Then they said to him, "Tell us on whose account this evil has come upon us. What is your occupation? Where do you come from? What is your country, and of what people are you?" And he said to them, "I'm a Hebrew, and I fear the Lord, the God of heaven, who made the sea and the dry land." Then the men were exceedingly afraid and said to him, "What is this that you have done?" For the men knew that he was fleeing from the presence of the Lord because he had told them. Then they said to him, "What shall we do that the sea may quiet down for us?" The sea grew more and more tempestuous. He said to them, "Pick me up and hurl me into the sea. Then the sea will quiet down for you, for I know it is because of me that this great tempest has come upon you." Nevertheless, the men rowed hard to get back to dry land, but they could not, for the sea grew more and more tempestuous against them. Therefore they called out to the Lord, "O Lord, let us not perish for this man's life, and lay not on us innocent blood, for you, O Lord, have done as it pleased you." So they picked up Jonah and hurled him into the sea, and the sea ceased from its raging. Then the men feared the Lord exceedingly, and they offered a sacrifice to the Lord and made vows. And the Lord appointed a great fish to swallow up Jonah. And Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days and three nights. We kind of come at this from maybe a surprising angle. The angle of money, and money lacks power. Money can seem irresistible. And when I say that, I mean it in two senses. Irresistible in that we desire it, or at least we desire what it can buy. So just witness the hoops we'll jump through to get it, the education, the training, the sucking up to the boss, the what we'll do to build our pension pots, whatever it is. It seems irresistible in that sense. But money also seems irresistible in the sense of its power. If someone's got money, it gives power. Irresistible power. Aristotle said money is the guarantee that we may have what we want in the future. It's powerful, it guarantees it. Just think what happens when you place your Amazon order, whatever the next essential is that you want, maybe an inflatable unicorn, whatever it is you're buying. But your money gives you great power. Someone's got to work in the factory to make the thing because of your money. Someone's got to work a 10-hour dull shift in the Amazon warehouse to distribute it. Someone's got to deliver it to you. Your money commands and gives power. Money bids many of us to be pulled along underground in glorified tin cans day after day, week after week, smelling other people's armpits for money. Its power seems irresistible. This passage says God is the truly irresistible one. He's irresistible in that when you see him as he really is, he's attractive, he's merciful, he's gracious. Irresistible in that sense, but also irresistible in terms of his power. Jonah tries to buy his way to Tarshish, gets out his money, he pays the boat fare, yet money and Jonah lack any kind of power to get Jonah somewhere that God doesn't want him to go. God is the one with power. He's irresistibly powerful. Maybe you're here as something of a skeptic and you just think, well, yeah, you know, give me a break. God, irresistible, what are you talking about? He's more some doddery old grandfather in the corner. He's got no power. And when I do vaguely pay him a visit and listen to what he's saying, he just sounds like he's muttering something judgmental. He doesn't seem irresistibly attractive. But this story would say, well, let's think again. God is the irresistible one. Verse 1 to 3 is resistance attempted. Verse 1, now the word of the Lord came to Jonah, the son of Amittai, saying, arise, go to Nineveh, that great city, and call out against it, for their evil has come up before me. Nineveh are God resistors. They're part of the Assyrian Empire, the local superpower of the day. They probably raped and pillaged their way through areas around Jonah's hometown. God, verse 2, tells Jonah to call out against their evil. They're resisting the way that God would call them to live. They're attempting resistance. Jonah is attempting resistance too, right? He resists God's plans for him. He says, God says, go to the great city of Nineveh. Jonah says, no. He's an Israelite prophet. He should be obedient. Instead, he resists God's plan. He arises and flees, verse 3, in the direction of Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. Tarshish was the opposite direction. So if I said to you, go and preach against the great evil of Norfolk, and you got on a boat to the USA, that would be the kind of geographical thing you were doing here. But the other thing Jonah's resisting is God's plans, not just for him, but for Nineveh. Because he knows God's MO, modus operandi. He's sent to call out against Nineveh's failure, but he knows that that's part of God's plan to hold out an offer of mercy to Nineveh. So in Jonah 4 verse 2, you read this. This is why I made haste to flee to Tarshish, God, for I knew that you are a gracious God and merciful, slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love and relenting from disaster. Jonah is angry that God shows mercy to Nineveh. Jonah resists God's plans to show mercy. We don't like to acknowledge it, maybe, but we can think the same. You know, send a good bit of mercy my way, God, and the way of my friends, but draw the line somewhere, God. The rapists, the paedophiles, the drug dealers, my boss, wherever it is. Not my boss. six weeks ago, we had we interviewed Jay Mariner here at the Lunchtime Talks. So he was a hardened drug dealer straight out of prison. Miraculously, his wife becomes a Christian. Some, the pastor and some people from church go around to his house. And the first thing he says to them is, look, if you don't get out of my house, I'm going to roll you up and post you back out the letterbox. Now, we heard in the story that Jay's a wonderfully changed, saved man. But it was a very rocky road for the 2 years it took him to come to kind of clear, saving faith. And you could think at moments along the way, there must have been moments where people in the church, the pastor, was thinking, mercy for this guy? Do we remember what he's done? Is there anything similar in our life? He resists God's plans for Nineveh. Resistance attempted. But God proves to be, in this passage, irresistible. In both senses. In a moment we'll see, well, why would you want to resist this merciful God? But first, we can't resist this powerful God. Can't resist this powerful God. Resistance is possible in a sense, but it's futile. We're almost supposed to laugh at the ridiculousness of the scene, right? I saw the other day a little kid dressed up in a little sumo nappy, whatever those things are called, and he was lined up against a real sumo wrestler, and it didn't go well, and he was twirled around in the air by the sumo wrestler. It's like that here. There's a massive gap between what Jonah says he believes and what his actions prove he believes. So he says in verse 9, well, I fear the Lord, the God of heaven. You know, if you fear the creator of the universe, don't run away. Verse 3, he gets out his credit card and buys a one-way ticket to Tarshish. You know, money can buy me out of trouble, maybe. Me and my money are more powerful than God. He also says, verse 9, he believes God made the sea. And then verse 3, he buys a ticket on a boat. That is just plain stupid. He's self-deluded, he doesn't really believe it, clearly. Resistance is futile, impossible. Verse 4, the Lord hurled a great wind upon the sea, and there was a mighty tempest on the sea, so that the ship threatened to break up. I think the raging of the latest typhoon that's passed through Hong Kong, raw power, it was irresistible, trail of devastation in its wake. Nothing can help. Verse 5, the mariners are afraid and they cry out to their God. Their gods, but their gods are powerless. In a sense, these pagan sailors are caught in the crossfire. It's primarily about Jonah. But the sailors are God resistors too. So they're trusting false gods, not the real God. And the Bible would say that we're all like that. We know deep down God deserves our all. And yet we find that truth too inconvenient. We resist the true God and turn to false gods or false ideologies and treat them as our functional source of help. Their pagan gods can't help them. And neither can their cargo can't help them either. So verse 5, they hurled their cargo that was in the ship into the sea. I don't know what it was. Plain commodities, Assyrian antiques, precious spices, just solid gold ingots. What was the cargo? We don't know. But just think of the time, the effort, the money that went into gathering all of those things. And yet, in the face of God's power, they're just useless. They've got no help at all. Verse 13, the men try their own strength. Well, maybe that's the solution. We should just try harder. The men rowed hard to get back to land, but they could not. They couldn't resist this powerful God, and resistance leads them down to the grave. Did you see the repetition of down? Verse 3, Jonah went down to Joppa. He went down onto the ship. Verse 5, Jonah had gone down into the inner part of the ship, and now he lay down and was fast asleep. And in the end, he's going to be cast down into the sea, and he's going to sink down to the very depths of the sea. Resistance leads him down to the grave. The sailors start stumbling around for answers. Verse 7, they cast lots, and the lot falls to Jonah. They hear he's trying to resist the God of heaven, and they get what Jonah should have got. Verse 10, they were exceedingly afraid. What is this you have done? We cannot resist this powerful God. Do we know this? God's plans are irresistible. God's plans are irresistible. God has planned for us to die once and after that to face judgment. We can't resist that. We can get ready for that day by trusting Jesus, but we can't resist that plan. God's plan is to have a great multitude of people from every tribe and tongue and nation and people saved by Jesus around his throne, praising his name. That is God's plan. God's powerful enough to make it happen. It's irresistible. We should stop resisting. If we walk on the tracks at Folkestone and try and stop the Eurostar, bad things are going to happen. It's irresistible. Don't try and stop it. Instead, get on board. Right? Get on board with the plan. It's going somewhere good. Paris for the weekend sounds lovely if someone wants to take me. It's going somewhere good. Sit back. Enjoy the ride. God's plan is going somewhere good. Or better than that, become one of the ticket attendants, the stewards on the train, a servant serving the destination. If God will get the gospel to the nations, well, why not serve that end instead of trying to resist it? Why not turn to our colleague and point them to Jesus if we are Christians here today? And you know that when I say money lacks power, money has some kind of power. God has given money power. You can use your money to help other people hear about Jesus and get in line with God's plan too. Would you do that? We can't resist this powerful God, but then also, why would we want to resist this merciful God? Six-figure bonuses might seem irresistible to some, but to those who know they need mercy, well, God's character, that is truly irresistible. Here they are, all in the midst of God's judgment, and here comes God's mercy. You get mercy to the sailors. You get this kind of breathless exchange, don't you? Sort of shouted into the face of the storm. There they are, pitching from pillar to post, and they just cry out, "What shall we do?" Jonah shouts back, "Pick me up! Hurl me into the sea!" Petrified, they pick him up, verse 15, they hurl him into the sea, and then the waves cease from their raging. God shows mercy to the sailors. It's a foretaste of mercy to pagan Nineveh. And I'd want to argue it's a foretaste of the kind of mercy God can show us. Think with me for a moment about Channel 4 advertising, if you ever stop to think about this. The little sort of introduction music for Channel 4, you get these sort of random shapes hanging around in the air. You know, you're on some council estate and you just see random shapes. And the car's kind of driving along and it's random shape, random shape, random shape. And then suddenly, all of the bits that are hanging in the air all line up and you suddenly see the number 4. And then the car carries on past and you can't, it just looks like random shapes again. I think that's a little something of what's happening here. That in Matthew 12, Jesus says he is one greater than Jonah. Most of the time, the focus is on Jonah, but at this moment, everything lines up like the cross. So you've got these pagan sailors living their life rejecting God. They are about to die in God's judgment. But then, as the man of God is hurled into the judgment of God, suddenly they are set free. They are rescued. That's like the cross. That Jesus at the cross says, "I will be hurled into God's judgment to rescue you from it." We can't resist this powerful God. Why would we want to resist this merciful God? He is so kind. He's ready in the person of his son to die for us. The sailors show us the right response. Verse 16, "The men feared the Lord exceedingly, and they offered a sacrifice to the Lord and made vows." What of Jonah? Well, verse 17, "The Lord appointed a great fish to swallow up Jonah, and he was in the belly of the fish 3 days and 3 nights." Now, for the biologists among us, okay, maybe the miracle isn't just the timing of the fish arriving, maybe the miracle is that he survives the stomach acid of the fish, or whatever biological issue you've got with this miracle. The point is it's a miracle, and the point is it's mercy. Eventually the fish spits Jonah back out, and this time Jonah does go to Nineveh. The fish is God's means of mercy. In a moment we'll think about mercy to Jonah, but first off, think with me about mercy to Nineveh. God has decided Nineveh are going to get a chance to receive mercy, and nothing's going to thwart him. God will hold out grace and mercy, even if it takes a fish to get the message there. God will show mercy to Nineveh. God will show wonderful mercy to sailors, to us, to Nineveh. But primarily this book is about God and his interactions and his desire to show mercy to Jonah. Jonah is Israel's representative here. Now think with me about this. If you were God and you wanted to get a message to Nineveh, how would you do it? I'd probably just boom it from the sky, or just sort of like zap it into their brains or something like that. If I was, surprisingly enough, I actually chose to use a human, I'd try and choose an obedient one to start off with. And the moment he was disobedient, well, I'd just kind of like stamp him out like an ant and pick someone else, right? But what does God do? No, God shows mercy to Jonah. He rescues him from judgment. And while in one sense he's very harsh with him, he's also very gentle with him. He graciously calls him back. So Jonah is a prophet. He's supposed to know the basics. Jonah, we are people in need of mercy. I'm the God who holds out mercy to you. Now hold out that mercy to others. But Jonah's forgotten the basics. God walks him back through the basics. Jonah, can you see you're a sinner? You need mercy. You're running away. Jonah, can you see my mercy? Jonah, will you come with me this time and actually hold out mercy to others? He's graciously winning him back. God doesn't just give up on us when we forget the basics. He wants to win us back when we fail to hold out mercy to others or the message to others. He wants to win us back to that by showing us, helping us remember the wonder of the message. I was chatting to someone the other day who every week in his office tries to sit down and go through the Word one-to-one, which is John's Gospel, with a non-Christian colleague, and he makes sure he clears time in the diary to do that because he really wants this person, and he's so excited this person wants to find out a bit more about Jesus. He wants to hold out the message. And as we close, we'll just think about money again. You can't serve both God and money, right? You either serve the one, hate the other, love the one, serve the hate the other. Who's a better master? Well, God's the better master. He's the one with power, not money. But he's also the better master in that he's the good master. Money, good servant, awful master, leaves you chewed up, spat out on the other side. God, if God is like this, merciful, well, wouldn't he be a much better master? Do you see, he's irresistible in both those senses, his power and his character, his mercy. Let me lead us in a prayer, and then there'll be a chance to bat these things around for a moment. Father, please help us to see you as gracious and compassionate, slow to anger, abounding in steadfast love. Please work in our hearts that you show us our need of mercy and your mercy to us. Please, we'll be ready to hold out mercy to others. In Jesus' name, amen.